to order.
We don't have legal counsel here. We're good.
Let's see. Can we get a roll call, please?
Andrew Iparoda.
Here.
Peter Leeds.
Present.
Jason Madison.
Here.
David Schwartz.
Here.
Randy West.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Thank you. Anybody from the public here?
You didn't give them enough time. Yep. I got 2 more minutes.
Let the minutes reflect there's no one present from the public, please. And can we take a moment, if you haven't already, to look over the minutes and if there's anything anybody spotted.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question on 5A.
Yeah, me too.
We have at the bottom, the last line says, committee discussed mandating that a home inspection be written and never verbal. But we don't have a conclusion. It's an open sentence here, and it's already in the rules that it's got to be.
That's what I put an additional sentence, if we could add that, that it was decided by the committee that the standards already have this requirement.
Yeah.
That or something to that effect.
We can't leave that open-ended, or someone's going to start giving verbal inspections, wondering what we did.
Okay. And actually, it's addressed in B. But I still think we should add that sentence. Or I'm sorry, Big B.
Oh, Big B, okay. Well, no, that was about abbreviated home inspections.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right.
Okay, I think we need your sentence.
So what I was looking at as well is we had, and I didn't spot it until yesterday, so there was nothing I could do about it, but we had made future agenda item 5B, so that's where I'm at here, I guess. And I don't see it on our agenda today.
The one that we wanted to talk more about?
Yeah.
The immediate repair, you didn't even be-
That was actually,
five
Big B.
Subsequent agenda, if you guys still want to talk about it.
Yeah, that sounds good. And if there, I'm trying to think here.
This is about those abbreviated home inspection reports.
Okay.
Abbreviated home inspections, rather.
Yeah,
there's no such answer, really.
So then,
And I would suggest to you that when we modify the minutes, we put a dash between the 4 and R4-30 because that's the proper site for the rule.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that would just carry through A, B, and C of 5A.
Right, it's R4-30, right?
Right.
And then in 7, my name is just misspelled. I don't care that much, but if we're cleaning it up.
I caught that.
I didn't even catch that.
It's only happened for like 56 years now. Kind of used to it. Anybody else have anything?
It's probably your AKA now.
It is, really. May it be with you, right?
Well, that's what your business card says, is may the Schwartz be with you.
Right. So then, I'm going to try on today's agenda to remember to
add that 5B.
B from February 14th minute.
Did staff get that sentence that you wrote in 5AA?
Yeah, is that
adequate? Do you have it written down?
I do. Yeah, you're welcome to that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would like to...
Yeah,
I'd like to make a motion that we accept these minutes as modified.
Second.
On 5AA and on 7, Mr. Schwartz.
Sounds good. We have a motion and it's second.
I'll second.
Any discussion on that? Is there any opposition to the motion?
I'll abstain since I wasn't here.
Okay, very good. Then the minutes are approved or adopted. All right. Item number 5 on the agenda is review, discussion, and possible action on the following. Whether to revise the standard required of certified home inspectors interested in volunteering to review applications.
So, gentlemen, this is on the agenda because the licensing department is having a tough time with all the applications for home inspector certification, finding qualified members or registrants to review the applications. And we thought if we softened the requirements that you voted on several years ago, that perhaps we might get more qualified people to volunteer.
Would you like the ladies to come in and kind of tell you their experiences?
Specifically, what softened which?
Well, as I recall, we had asked that people who volunteer to look at applications have 5 years of experience.
We never did that.
But that never...
The only requirement I remember was that this committee approved their letter of interest. And once they were on the EAC by being approved by a letter of interest, we had no control. Then it was in staff's hands to give it to whomever. I don't remember any qualifications.
I don't think we ever managed to pass anything like that, the 5 year or the 500 inspections we talked about last
time. Staff may be under...
It's in there?
You have been. Okay. Well, we would like to see that for
peer review
and the other one, parallels,
okay,
which is still up in the works, but not for peer review, not for applications.
Not for applications.
I thought Peter just looked at all of them.
He does.
Sometimes
basically.
I feel like that.
Would there be some minimum, though? Should there be some?
Well, they need to send a letter of intent through this committee.
So then that's the safeguard.
And this way we look at them to be sure that they're not just
newly licensed, you know, or something.
Well, and I would think if they're, you feel they're qualified to be on the EAC, they're qualified
right,
for the new applications.
That was our intent, to use the EAC for applications and assessments.
Mm-hmm. Now we have, but I understand business is picked up and
everybody's super busy.
So you're volunteering?
No, I'm going to repeat my attempt to streamline the process, because everything's breaking down because it's very hard to do.
It is hard
right now. It's a long, nightmarish process because people's reports are all different and often weird and hard to find what you're looking for.
So you're going to mandate a report that everyone...
I've already laid out line by line from the checklist
right.
the standards,
I mean, the checklist supplement
and then
is helpful.
We're going to ask them, in my opinion, we should ask them to cut and paste from their report the exact finding and put it in this form.
But we can't require them to do that.
Then if you don't, then add 2 months to your application process. Just tell them right up front, you're screwed if you don't.
We already do that.
Do you?
Yeah,
clear enough where they get it?
With the supplement, we say if you don't, you know, we can't make you submit the supplement, but if you don't, it's going to delay your...
Where is it? It's buried in a one page that, you know, you'd have to pick that sentence out, right?
I don't think the problem, if you don't mind my disagreeing, I don't think the problem is with the applicant. I think the problem is with the reviewer. Personally, when I get an application to review, I say, okay, I'm looking at 4 hours. This is just what I'm looking at. And I sit down and I read every word of this and I follow down my checklist and I go back for the ones I couldn't find to see if I can find it before I send it in. I think we just need people who are willing to give it the time to actually go through this.
Did you quit doing inspections?
No, I have. I'm very busy. I have turned a few away, but not for this.
Wow.
The
that's 4 hours per.
Not all of them.
No, some are. Some. If it's my report, I can do it in 5 minutes. But if I mean, and then everything works down. But I always look at it, especially some of these forms that have been around forever. I just know that I'm going to have to explain why I don't like this, and so It just seems to me that these guys are going to have to say, okay, I can take two or I can take three, and staff will get it back in 2 to 3 weeks. I think the problem really is with the reviewers. They want it.
It's hard for most people to fall in line with your commitment and dedication. It just is.
It is. But that's where we drop it. We don't have enough people with the dedication to actually open it up and say, okay, this is going to take me some time. Let's get after it.
Have you tried doing where you have a round table of them come in, and that doesn't work? it's worked a little bit and then no one showed up.
That's adding drive time to the already hard process. And then if you're going to do it by, what are you thinking, committee or something?
Well, staff has done
no,
that.
No, I mean, just you have a group of four guys sitting around a table and you get applications and you just go through them. I mean, but if you can't get four guys here to do it or three guys here, whatever. Right.
You've got to tell them ahead of time.
That's even
staff
less
tried to
convenient.
Hit us with that one time and I ended up taking five of them home. Okay?
Yeah, we tried that. You know what? He's got the resolution, a keg.
You got
it. Now we're talking. I think that
salt pack in the middle of the table, and you get a beer every time you finish one.
He sips it at beer parties.
I think there'd be some liability there.
So it's
Uber.
We can all drink.
Commit to Uber.
You get one finish, you get a beer.
Well, the beer is why it takes him 4 hours now.
There you go.
Why we love
and
you.
At five, you do a shot.
Yeah. This is shot at the beginning, drink beer every time, shot at the end.
Okay, well, what we have been doing is Patty has actually been reviewing a lot of them. And not particularly well. But
I'm sure that you're doing a great job because you're probably taking the time. How long does it take you to get through them?
You know, if it's a good report, 20 minutes.
Okay,
if it's a bad report and I'm on it over an hour, then I kick it to a home inspector.
Oh, okay.
Then I know it's beyond my capability.
Well, in reality, when we review it, we don't know whether it's accurate. We're not reviewing for accuracy. Right. We don't know what he saw.
And you're supposed to be reviewing for minimum qualifications.
Yeah, right.
And we've had some of that trouble with the gentlemen who have kindly volunteered is they're not reviewing for minimum. They're reviewing for, you know, I've been in practice for 25 years.
If it's up to their standards.
See, but once again, it's the reviewer. You see, I really feel the problem is in the reviewer, not in the applicant. We can give applicants 1,000 different sheets of paper, and we're still going to get crossouts and lousy reports. And the reviewer...
It looks like that's on the agenda. We'll be talking about that anyway here.
Right, I have a bit of a problem with that.
I had a couple too. Yeah.
With this? So, this is actually... Isn't this just a bigger version of what we're already using? Isn't this just blown up so that we can see it better?
Well, we're going to talk about that later, so let's
and,
wait.
And an area to put reasons?
So where are these, talking about revising standards, where do these exist that you're talking about with the 5 years?
They were voted on, and
it was
part of the result of a meeting.
It's like an internal procedure.
So what do we need to do?
I would say we should... Just pass a motion right now to eliminate that if it exists.
I'll make a motion that anybody that's been approved to be on the EAC committee is qualified to review applications.
I'll second that motion.
How about if they haven't?
But I thought that's pretty much the way it was now.
If they haven't been, they need to send a letter of intent through this committee.
Now, if they're brand newbies, that's the people we get to offer is they've just gone through the process and they say, I'll volunteer, but... They just got their license.
Letter of intent.
How little is too little?
That would be too little.
So can get booted out.
We amend that to clarify that it requires a letter of intent and approval by the committee?
Yes.
Okay. Well, isn't that what the requirement to be on the EAC is anyway?
Yes.
Is it?
It always has been.
Okay.
But I mean, someone can't just walk in here and go, I want to be on the EAC. I mean, you tell them.
Well,
about a letter, because
then
it goes to you guys, and
right
then it usually goes, do those go to the board as well?
But Jason, are there some folks that would just come in with a letter of intent that aren't on an EAC?
Mm-hmm.
So
the one to review applications?
Yeah.
Either or.
So a little bit of a lesser even requirement.
Well, the letter of intent should come through this committee.
But what if people were willing to do it, but they're not even wanting to submit the letter of intent? Is that it?
How are they going to be able to review
like
the report?
Jason's motion is if they're qualified for the EAC, we agree they're qualified to serve. But for people that come in with a letter of intent through the board that aren't on the EAC, we have the option of approving them as well.
So they're not going to be on the EAC, they're only going to be approved for applicants, not for complaints.
Right. I think if they send in a letter of intent, it should come to this committee. It should be put on this committee.
No, I agree, but are we requiring them to be on the EAC as well?
Yes.
Definitely. Okay.
It's the EAC that's the group of people, is the pool of people that we're using for applications and assessments.
Oh, okay. So there isn't a second?
No. Mm-hmm. Okay. It sounded like that was part of the problem you were having.
Yes.
So I think anybody, I mean, you know, and if they're qualified to review applications, they should be qualified to sit on EAC, and we need those people anyway, so.
So you're going to look at home inspection applications?
Sure.
Awesome.
No.
So is,
I don't blame you.
Do we put out appeals to home inspectors by email or anything?
Uh-huh. Yes, we do, and there's always a notice in the newsletter.
What about like a separate request?
We have. Not in the past couple months,
We got a really harsh letter not too long ago saying, how much time are you actually going to dedicate to this?
Oh, with the commitment letter?
The commitment letter.
That was mailed, but it seems like if you have the power now to push emails all the time, I would just, because emails get, you know, accumulating where people miss them and stuff. If it's real brief, it's only on that, it's not buried in a newsletter that's 15 pages.
Volunteer to review. Yeah. Application.
I mean, if we could just get four or five people, that would do one app a week.
Yep.
We wouldn't have a backlog, but we can ask them also then to be on the EAC. They may not be willing to do both. They may be willing to sacrifice that 2 or 3 hours a week, but they may not be willing.
Right. Well, they can always refuse to be show up on a committee meeting.
Right.
But they should be on the EAC. The EAC is the Enforcement Advisory Committee is a whole mess of guys. And then every now and then we grab four of them and throw them on an EAC meeting.
So it's just a pool.
It's
a pool.
And it's kind of like in business, too. You got to keep pushing the message constantly if you want result. You know, it's just the nature of it. But
sales.
Could we, if you were to do, yeah, exactly. If you were to do that, could we establish a streamlined way to just approve them without having, you know, because we're about at our summer break where we're not going to meet again for...
We're not?
We often don't.
We're not, you may.
Yeah, you're welcome to.
We haven't met since February.
I know.
But,
We do.
I'm sure you don't want to wait, right? So is there a streamlined way for us
to... We can just bring them to the board if they apply.
There you go.
The board meets every month, so... And then we'll tell you about them when you meet.
Right, I would say if they come in, send it to one of these guys to look at it. And
that would
give your seal of approval, just tell her. And
that's what we have the chairman for.
Good call.
She can say,
anybody,
you know, Dave looked at this and said it was okay. And
that's a good call.
And the board will say, okay.
So we should probably formally vote on Jason's motion.
I agree. We have a motion and a second. So Jason's motion was to streamline the process of EAC membership to not... have any requirements or
to review applications was if you're a member of the EAC committee you're qualified to review the applications.
Okay, as simple as that.
EAC, do you have to be 5 years?
What we're doing now is giving them a way to not be on the EAC and do it.
No, we're still going to require they be on the EAC.
If I can just reiterate for Patrice, the object was that anyone who wanted to be on the EAC would write a letter of intent, all right, or interest that would go through this committee to the board. If we need to streamline it directly to the board with a committee member, okay, that would be fine.
Okay.
All right. And but they have to be part of the Enforcement Advisory Committee, which is a giant pool. a small giant pool that we pull people from.
That's going to get that giant pool.
That's
all right.
Relative.
So okay, we just that wanted to discuss that. Thank you.
No, that's our motion, actually. So.
All right.
I say any other discussion? Hearing none, is there any opposition to that motion? Great. Motion passes.
And I assume you guys who have employees get your employees to review applications or stress to them that they should? That's what I do with my guys. And tell them, you know what? You guys should, you know, think about doing this stuff. So that's, you guys got pools of people that you can use too.
Very true.
If you're the boss and you make it, you know, hey, this might be a good idea for you to do.
It is a great learning process.
Well, right? Yeah.
To see other people's mistakes prevents you from making that same mistake.
Yeah.
Okay. Item number 5B, how to properly conduct report reviews, i.e. requirements of a qualifying home inspector sample report.
It's me. I asked for that to be put on because I'm looking at these reports and I don't always know what I should be looking for or if I'm seeing something I think it's a problem and it isn't a problem. So I just wanted to have a better sense from you guys. I'm kind of seeing repeats. People don't document how they tested for functional flow and functional
drainage.
Missing columns, missing reporting on column type or condition.
Or like with electricity or low? I mean, what should I be looking for, PSIs? Am I looking for watts? I mean, how detailed should it be?
No to both of those, but average voltage, yes.
Checklist.
Okay. It's pretty simple on the checklist to follow that checklist. I know the report, it's hard to find these things, but there's really two ways that these guys can meet that standard. One is to give a type and a condition of the item, okay, if that's what's required. Sometimes it's just type, sometimes it's just condition. And the other would be to list items in a specific category with a statement that says, unless otherwise noted, these are all okay. And then below that, they put their adverse conditions, in fact. Okay? But that gets very treacherous, because some guys would like to say that the whole house is okay unless otherwise noted, you see?
Yeah,
so we have to keep that into a specific category of electrical, plumbing, HVAC. So when you see that statement and they do say that unless otherwise noted, and they list in that all the different things of electrical, like amperage, voltage, main panel, service type, all of those things are in that paragraph. And if all those things are in that paragraph and they say, unless otherwise noted, they're all okay, that'll be good, provided everything on your checklist in that category is in that paragraph. So if you go in there and you find amperage not in that paragraph, okay, then, well, of course, amperage is not a good, that's a type and it has to be noted. If they say incompatibilities and forget to put that in that paragraph, then you ding them for incompatibilities. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do.
So that's one way. That's the hard report to actually...
But even that's not 100%, because using the electrical, the checklist says specifically you can't just say the panel is okay or serviceable for compatibility on breakers.
Right. They would have to say compatibility would have to be in that.
And they're separately somewhere. Yeah.
Right. And then you don't want that to extend out too far. All right, you want that to stay in electrical. So it gets very touchy. The best way for these guys would be to say type and condition. Type is sliding glass, windows don't even have. Type of cladding, stucco, okay, condition, okay. All right, I mean, home inspections are so easy.
Yeah, that's like, again, this is so easy. How can people not do that?
They can't get it right.
Now, a lot of people seem to report the foundation and the floor as the same.
If it's a slab on grade, you can stretch the rule a little bit, okay? All right, because your foundation on a slab on grade, it is a slab on grade.
And will I know if there should have been cross connections or if there's nothing there?
That's an asterisk item.
It's an asterisk.
Remember the asterisk item. If it's asterisk, it doesn't have to be addressed unless it exists.
And then they'll say they can't access the attic, therefore they can't report on actually quite a series of
things. They got,
how likely is that?
That's okay. if they say that they couldn't access the attic, they have to give a reason why.
Yep.
Okay.
Too fat to get through the door.
Well, too fat to get through the door is a real reason. Okay? Honest to God, like you've written in here, home inspectors.
Well, I've known guys that are like 6'7", and I'm like, dude, there's attics. You are not getting in.
Right.
It's just life.
Crawl spaces is more
but
likely.
Then they take
crawl spaces.
These guys will
I've never used that in a report. I've never, ever.
Okay, we can't
anybody
stop
else can
them
fit in there, I'll get in there.
All right, if I can't get in the attic and there's a lot of adverse conditions up there, they're going to be sued, okay? Yeah. Not here. Here we'll say, well, he couldn't get in. He met the minimal standard. But in civil court, they're going to throw him out.
Sometimes.
Sometimes?
Okay. Yeah, sometimes, unless you have a shelf and another shelf and a stereo on top of that. I mean, there's a lot of reasons.
But he does have to say why. Possessions, blocking, access,
I saw them say that.
And then he has to say on all the items that would have been in that attic that they're not visible and give that reason, see? He can't just walk away from the whole attic and you're looking through his report looking for ductwork, for instance.
Or insulation.
Insulation, vapor barrier, which is a big one they always miss.
Yeah.
What was the one I'm thinking? Wiring and stuff like that. You know,
right, well,
this is all important that they address.
What if on the structural page he says attic access was blocked by personal belongings? On the insulation page, he just checks the box that says not visible.
Yeah, that would work as long as you can follow the sequence.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of
Peter getting old or what? He's kind of mellow today, doesn't he?
His He's being nice to me.
I went through all my jokes before you.
You even said the word asterisk without grimacing.
Oh, I hate that.
So flues and vents. Frequently they'll report on a kitchen flu or vent or a bathroom flu or vent, but then no other flues or vents.
Well,
are there always flues or vents?
Only on gas. Only if there's gas on the property, and there's no such thing as a kitchen flu. Okay. There's no such thing as a bathroom flu. Okay, those are vents. So if they say flues and vents in the bathroom, you want to bring them in and slap them.
There's bathroom ventilation and kitchen ventilation they have to report on.
Okay.
Flues and vents are for gas appliances, and the gas appliance has to have a flue to expel the gases of combustion and a fresh air vent, because to burn
clean
fuel, you have to have fresh air.
Okay, I have to tell you guys, like, I walk around my house now. And
now you're getting good.
I'm like, this isn't good. We can't sell our house.
You're going to be my first hiree.
I know, she could become
She could become a home inspector.
There. So is there ever a reason there wouldn't be a GCFI?
GFCI. No, because to stay, we have to stay to current law. Okay, so the home inspector has to understand current law. Now, if the house was built in 1940, there's not a GFCI in there at all. Okay? However, he needs to tell them that. Okay? Because this is a safety issue. He needs to tell them there aren't GFCIs in the kitchen, bathrooms, exterior, garage, basements, wherever we require. Laundries now. Okay?
GFCI, ground fault?
Ground fault circuit.
Yeah. Okay. And that's one of the reasons it could take so long, because I have it on the electrical page, but I've seen reports where it's on the bathroom section, so now that you know that it's not on the electrical page, you also got to go to the garage section, and the exterior section, and the kitchen section, and everywhere else they're required.
Or one big note saying, because the rule says they have to test all existing ground fault protections, but the rules also say that any adverse conditions need to be addressed. So not having ground fault in the kitchen and especially bathrooms, on a 1940 home wasn't required, all right? It's not going to be there unless they've upgraded. But it still thus becomes an adverse condition, do you see?
Now, do you guys have to report on tamper-proof electrical and all that now, too?
Tamper-proof.
The new outlets now, you know, report on those.
Yeah.
Tamper. Are we going that way?
Yep.
You see my fingernails? I don't have any.
Yeah, they're all... the new electrical requirement.
If we're going with... Well, yeah, and are we putting arc faults everywhere now, too?
Yeah, those have to be in the bedrooms.
That's
the
coming.
Bedrooms, yeah, that's
I've inspected a couple of new homes with about 20 AFIs in there.
I saw that, too. I'm pulling them all out.
Yeah. They fail a lot.
They fail.
All the time.
Arc fault interruption.
It's a breaker in the panel, and half the time you hit the test button, it smokes. Smoke comes out, and we can't fix that. Only an electrician can catch that smoke and put it back in and make it work again. So once it smokes, we're done.
Not only that, your ground fault... Your ground fault actually reads a fluctuation between your hot wire and your neutral wire. Your arc fault reads as direct short. So there are two different types of breakers that actually almost look exactly the same. Okay, except they got a code.
Hot to neutral, hot to ground.
Right. And so they're putting them in bedrooms because children with their electronics, they're running extension cords everywhere, covering them with throw rugs, and the houses are burning down. So they're putting them in bedrooms. But now if we're putting them everywhere, this is going to be a real nightmare for people.
Yeah.
And for us, especially if they all start tripping.
Well, we're not required to test them yet.
No.
So,
yeah, we don't have to address those, so you don't have to look for that.
But they are new rules, and like Jason was saying,
the electrical code has it.
If the new rules are coming in and it's a new house, then you have to address that. And eventually, if it really becomes an issue, eventually we will address them as an adverse condition because they don't have them. But we're talking 20 years from now. We'll all be.
I'll tell you what, my policy is a vacant home, I'll test them. Occupied, you test them, you're shutting off that entire bedroom. DVRs, the old lady in oxygen, the fish tank, you're shutting off everything.
Well, we had that,
like a comedy show.
We had the Bourne case a couple months ago where it was against a home inspector and he tripped the GFI to test it and it never reset and all their food spoiled.
No, well, garage, freezer in the garage.
Well, you hit him up, I hope, because...
I hope not.
Well, I hope they did, because the reason is that to test the ground fault is not just to trip it, but also to be sure it resets.
What if you can't find it because it's in a garage full of stuff?
You got to write that up.
No, I get it, but it was the knothead that plugged the refrigerator freezer into the GFCI.
It's the person who made the first mistake.
That's who's at fault.
Yeah, but we don't govern the knothead that did that. We govern the guy who couldn't find it to reset it and never told anybody.
The new electrical code requires all garage outlets to be GFI, including dedicated for refrigerant freezer, including the overhead opener.
Right.
They're all supposed to be on a GFI.
Well, unless they're a model device, appliance outlets.
Yeah, dedicated. Oh, really? Okay, so the real problem with that I would say you'll encounter is that what's required of reporting is when it's an immediate major...
Need of immediate major repair.
Right.
They have to recommend what action is to be taken, whether it's monitor or further review or attention now kind of thing. So you're going to have to determine when that is. That's kind of trouble for a layman. So that's where...
Yeah, but Patrice is doing a great job determining that. She's no longer a layman.
Yeah.
That's true.
And the guys that are coming through our EAC are not supposed to be laymen either. That's why we review their letters of intent so that we get a handle on what their knowledge is.
You're familiar with that rule and everything?
Yeah, I look if they find something wrong, what did they recommend?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, whether or not it's the right recommendation, I won't know. But
we don't care, really.
Yeah.
And
2-2 does say that it could be that a need of immediate major repair can be due to installation, blah, 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 or a change in current residential building standards,
right,
which is code. We don't use that four-letter word.
Yeah.
But basically, that's where the GFIs and the ungrounded outlets and the bathrooms and stuff come in.
Right, that's when they become adverse conditions, even though they weren't there when the house was built.
Yep.
Yeah. Right, Do you have one more pipes? Mm-hmm. Supports and insulation. Should they always report that it does or doesn't?
They have to, and I'm so upset with these guys because they love to say, I can't see anything. But they can see a lot. They don't know how much they can see. All right, even if it's only the riser coming in and going into the house. I mean, for God's sakes, tell me that it's solid, you know? And insulation in Maricopa County, you're not going to have any, all right, until you get up to Cave Creek or something
like
that.
Should they say?
My report says not required.
Okay. Not required in this area or whatever.
But they should say not required. I mean, how hard is it to just take that checklist and rather than throw all this nightmare on you trying to figure it out and me trying to figure it out, why don't they just say not required? Okay? That would work.
That would be good. I appreciate that myself.
Cool.
So that's what you write down.
You can always call one of us, too, if you get to it.
Dave.
Randy's really easy to get a hold of. Not.
I forgot my phone today, yeah.
Well, and I think myself and Rob will probably start looking at some if we continue to get, you know, a huge amount.
You know, the other thing we used to do is to take staff on an inspection. You guys should go out on one to see it because it's real eye-opening, I think.
That would be a great help.
Yeah, I think it would. So you're welcome.
Will it count as a parallel
for
our application?
Yes, as a matter of fact. And you'll be bored to tears and expect to spend time and a lot of boredom time.
Boredom.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, home inspections are boredom. I tried to get my kids to go all the time. They're, next thing you know, they're out in the truck doing this.
They're not kids. I mean, you're young, but you're not kids.
It's a boring situation. But yeah, you'll enjoy it.
Okay, so there's no action on this one, and there's probably, you probably won't need to keep it on. Item 5C on the agenda, amendments to rules affecting home inspectors.
Okay, so just as an update to the rules that we proposed, Kurt walked over the draft and opened a docket for us, and the rules were published this week, right? With the Secretary of State?
The rules, because we only opened up the... It just opened up.
The notice of docket opening.
Right.
Okay, so the rules haven't been published yet, but the notice is out to the public that we are working on rules. So what that means is now we can accept written comments or questions and concerns about the way our rules are currently drafted. Once we put out the draft of all the rules, then we'll probably see the comments on the new language and, we have to then address those. So like if a home inspector takes a look at what we're proposing in the definitions, which basically, as you know, does away with a lot of the definitions, and we get a comment, we'll have to address that. So you may see some of that on upcoming agendas.
Sure.
And it should take about a year for the rules to go through. Yeah, so.
Okay. So we'll maybe keep that on the agenda, just if we can periodically keep tabs on that. Thank you. Awesome. And 5D is changes to EAC meetings and assessments.
This is the exciting one. I like this.
Sounds like yours.
I was at, no, that's not mine. I was at this meeting. It's Doug's, actually.
Yes,
yeah.
It's
and, I believe what I came out of that meeting understanding is that staff actually owns the complaint, all right? So staff wants to control that complaint rather than turning it over to an enforcement advisory committee member to chair the enforcement advisory committee. So staff wants to chair the committee, and this way they know that their committee reports will all be uniform, okay? And they'll use home inspectors for the committee and also for the assessments. That takes a big burden off of us guys.
Yeah, that's fine.
And I really like the idea because I put a lot of time into committee report writing. And to not have to do that, to be able to do an assessment, which will give the staff the words that they need, and to come back and do a committee meeting, and then let staff take it from there.
But to be sitting here and not there.
Right, is a great idea. I thought it was the best idea that came out of this building in the last 20 years.
20 years? Jeez!
Well, I haven't been here 20 years.
17 years. I've been here 17 years. Can you believe that? Anyway, Doug should explain it to us.
Yeah.
And just to follow up, the other part of the change that we're looking at with the EAC process, particularly with home inspectors, is, you know, instead of voting on substantiating every allegation and every reporting deficiency that comes out of the investigation, our idea is to vote on whether to substantiate the violation, which is 30101. Whether the home inspector failed to meet the standards.
Yeah, I thought that was that was the cream to the crop when I was here. What Doug is saying is simply that rather than vote on every deficiency,
all 17 things,
use the deficiencies as the evidence of a violation of not meeting the standards.
And would you still use the 1 to 5 scale or something for the?
Won't have to.
Yeah, well, for example, if you substantiate that the alleged violation has been committed, really your weight to severity is going to depend on the serious nature
of what they are,
deficiencies and the number of them.
Mm-hmm. What about reporting deficiencies versus allegation from a?
Out the door, as far as I'm
they're concerned. All combined now.
No. Report deficiencies. The second half of the assessment will now just be one item. Did he meet the standard or not? The assessments or the allegations would be handled normally, but
so
the deficiencies.
He gets no feedback on line items.
Well, they'll all be reviewed. Okay.
So if they didn't attend, say, they'll have zero feedback on what they missed.
Yeah, because there's one thing new that gets a 5 and the other 4, 8 get 1s, but all they're going to know is there's a 5.
Yeah, and who cares? And the reason I say that is I've seen so many committee members come in here and tell, oh, this is a learning process. This is not a learning process. Your learning process was when you did your parallels, when you put your life into the construction industry, when you got your license, okay? And your experience as a home inspector. This is an enforcement advisory committee meeting where you screwed up and we're taking care of that.
But we want them to learn.
Well, you want them to learn. Personally, I want
the
to get them out the door.
The state wants them to learn?
Well,
that's
I don't know if the state wants them to learn. You see, this is my point that I've really been upset about over the last 2 years. I've got so many committee chairmen coming in and saying, we want you to learn. That's not why we're here. We do want them to learn, but that's not why we're here. Okay? That's why associations are here. That's why they're
well, sure, globally, but when they make a specific mistake,
that's a learning opportunity.
Very good.
You know,
and,
so
and they have taken advantage of that.
But this isn't the forum. This isn't the forum to teach them that. So,
yeah.
So personally, if we take all their deficiencies, throw them in the one, and throw a five on it, let them figure it out.
You know, if they didn't show up. Then if they show up, then they're going to know what we discussed and hear everything.
Will they even see the list of reporting deficiencies they have?
That should be out.
Yeah. So that will come out of the assessments.
Yeah, that is.
So they will see the list that was found to be deficient.
They should be prepared if they're going to come to the EAC meeting to know what it is that's going to be discussed.
Okay. That
and
makes sense.
And they get those. They get a whole list of those ahead of the meeting.
I like the idea of lumping everything together. If there's 10 allegations against them, and you lump it all together, I think it should say, you were found, for fault for the following 1, 4, 7, and 9.
Yeah.
Because you don't want them to come back and go, well, I didn't do anything wrong on this one. It's like, well, okay, yes, you didn't. But
they're going to be, they're only going to find out about the substantiated ones.
Right.
If it's not substantiated, it won't be a part of it anyway.
Right. Well, it'll be a part of the assessment, which they also are privy to. So they'll see these were thrown out.
Right.
Okay, and that they got grouped out. And by the way, the deficiencies, not assessments, but they got whittled down from 20 to 4, and they're being hit for the 4 and all of that. But they'll see the whole history of that.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that. I think it's great.
My idea, though, is to get away from the allegations. What's the distinction between an allegation and deficiency? If they're failing to meet standard with whatever is coming to our attention as an allegation, it's the same thing as a deficiency in the report.
Well, no.
That's what you're looking at.
But we can't walk away from it completely, Doug. It's simply because it's our only chance to see their report.
Right.
Okay? The allegation may be that they missed some wood rot at a door, but the rest of the report might be a nightmare. Okay?
No,
so we have to. We
I
still
agree.
Have to work with deficiencies.
Right. I see what you're saying, though.
But an allegation, my AC didn't work, and that's what I'm complaining about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to look at the whole report, and if his report is deficient in that area, that constitutes a violation of 301.01.
Right. Well, of the allegation, though. It only substantiates the allegation.
What difference does it make whether it's an allegation or just something that's discovered as a deficiency during the assessment process? What's the difference?
It
still supports that violation.
It does. And the violation is going to be redundant when it comes to deficiencies. I can understand that. But we have to, I feel we need to go into those deficiencies simply because some of these guys are really, I mean, it's the only way we know if they're following the rules. If in fact, I guess we're going back to education, but if in fact they get told that they screwed up on their air conditioning and therefore their report didn't meet the standard, they're going to correct that, but they're not going to correct all the other things. They need to be made aware of all the other things.
And here's another example. What if in the report he said, I operated the air conditioner and it was perfectly okay, then a contractor comes out there and says the condenser's missing. It couldn't have been okay. There's no way it worked. That's not a problem with complying with the standards. That's a problem with his technical aptitudes. That's why the allegations should be a little bit different. He complied with the standards of practice. He just lied or didn't do it right.
Well, then you have to realize there's other rules in the practice
act that can take care of that.
Right.
My fear is that you're going to take it down to house okay or house not okay, the same type of idea with the assessments. We still have to tell them, we still have to ding them for their deficiencies as well as the initial allegations from a client.
Right. In the aggregate, those would be the findings of the committee
to
support
see,
that violation.
I think you'll see as it filters out that they will all be addressed.
Okay.
I would
love this idea.
I would almost want to see a 1 to 10 again just because there's just oddities that go on. I can remember a case where there was an improperly built staircase, dangerous staircase. The person comes in, has x-rays of their ankle that was destroyed, screws and plates in it.
Fill down.
You know, if they didn't have that, it's a simple, you missed a staircase, it wasn't 3/8 inch variance between each riser or something. That's a little different, so we try and project that concept on, or I do when I'm doing them, this particular allegation is actually dangerous. This one, whether somebody got hurt or not, this one rises a bit higher.
Well, that's, we still got that with the 1 to 5.
We do, but 1 to 5 for the whole thing is like, wow, that's going to be weird. And does the board ever change what the committee thought?
Sometimes.
Then, wow.
Yeah.
Hopefully, sometimes. Where do they have the knowledge to do that?
Well, when you're done and the EAC is done with the report.
We're not writing anymore.
Right, but it will still, we will still have a written report and all the evidence in the report and the assessments go to the board members. We invite the parties in. The board members have looked at everything before the meeting and then they dialogue with the parties and can question, can hear what might be mitigating, what might be aggravating, and they can change the recommendation that has been previously made.
That's up to them. We just make recommendations.
Well, I get it, but we're not anymore. We're not writing that report that says, remember, we justify why this one's a bit higher. This staircase, you know, we're giving that a 5 because it actually resulted in serious injury.
But there was so much controversy about the 1 to 10 that that's why we made the 1 to 5 with a distinct definition of what each 1 to 5 was.
I'm just saying, I think, and I could be wrong, there's no question about that, but now with a whole bunch of items, the 1 to 5 becomes more problematic than a little more wiggle room to go, well, it's in...
But they're all going to be thrown out. Say, for instance, you have a whole mess of deficiencies, okay? And then we review these deficiencies just to be sure that they're there, okay? And the staff writes the committee report. We put a weight on all these deficiencies, okay? Staff, if they don't take the heaviest weight, then they're not doing their job. So in essence, your staircase would be covered because that would be a 5, all right? So the fact that you didn't write a good report is going to end up with a weight on it of 5, all right?
Okay, I just, being the analytical weirdo that I am, I would literally go down the line if I'm doing one, and I will go, I would give that a 2, I would give that a 4, and then I'm going to average at the end. I'm going to get out my calculator, and I'm going to go, I would give this a 3.39.
The reason we went to the 1 to 5 was because when we were having his EACs, he'd vote 3, and you'd vote 9, and he'd vote 6, and he'd vote 4. And that's why we wrote the thing that said, this is the thing. If it's just a bookkeeping thing, you forgot to put the standards, that's a 1.
What are you going to do when it's 30 items? Are you just going to go kind of wing it and go, in summary, in whole, that's
I can take the highest number and use that one.
That's what
I mean. You have a dangerous condition.
If there's a 5 on there.
5 and 20 ones.
That's
a 5.
It's a 5.
You know, you can't just say,
that's
well, there's 20 ones and
that's
1.5 and the average is 2.1.
Freakishly rare. Yeah. That's like... I've had 2 that were injury people injured.
But even so,
there could be a 5 without an injury, too.
It's gonna be,
I think staff is just going to take the highest number.
Oh, staff will assign the...
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
And during the EAC, if I understand it, you're still going to have your discussion. It's just staff is going to be the one that's going to be writing everything down.
Staff will assign the number without any input of what number.
No, they're going to look at what we did.
You still have your discussion, and you might still go 1, 2, 5, 4, and then, you know, but then you guys will have to come to some
kind of consensus. So then everybody needs to know that if there's a 5 in there, we're not averaging.
Right.
If there's a...
It's pretty much going to be whatever, you know.
So it's whatever the highest number is.
Right, exactly.
Four of you sit around and say, let's say there's 4 EAC members, and all of you say, yes, this was dangerous. It's a 5.
Mm-hmm.
Doug's going to write 5.
And I wrote that 1 to 5 thing, which is why I was a little defensive there. But the number 5 says, you know, it doesn't matter if somebody hasn't fallen down and broken their ankle yet. It says if it's a dangerous condition, it's a 5. If it's no combustion error or a water heater vent pipe into the attic or
rotted
whatever.
Rotted plywood in a balcony or, you know, something that's, or railings falling
high
off
risk,
or, you know. Anything that could potentially be a life safety issue needs to have a...
And that's exactly what's in there, life safety issue. Yeah.
So that could be reflected in the report. I mean,
the report.
The investigator could reflect that to the board, what the committee's concern were,
and
why.
Sure.
And all those other numbers would still go to the board, you know, in the committee report, as all these, as the minutes of the meeting go in there. And that would help the board decide on what the disciplinary action is going to be. Okay, he's got a five. This is going to be hard. But look at all these other things he's also got. That's going to be hard.
What do you mean? There's not going to be numbers assigned?
Well, yeah, there would be, right?
Each one.
All the paperwork goes to the board members, right? Yeah. So when the committee brief comes to us, it's going to have all these deficiencies. We're going to number all these deficiencies.
No, we're not going to number all of them.
Well,
not a severity number.
You're not going to vote on all of them. You're still discuss all of them.
We're not giving a severity
number. Well, we have to do each individual.
That was the whole idea, is that we don't go through all 17. We just group all 17 as one.
No, we're not trying to.
Isn't that what you said, Doug? Isn't that what you...
I don't think that your intent was, and I may be wrong, but I don't think your intent was actually to shorten the committee meeting. I think your intent was to shorten or to consolidate the committee report. Is that not true? In essence, if a guy has 14 deficiencies against him in the committee meeting, they should all be addressed by the committee.
And then
when it comes time to the report, the one question is, did it meet the standard or not? No, it did not, because we substantiated these deficiencies, and then the highest number of those deficiencies will be put on that as a recommendation.
Now, I thought what you meant was that if there's 14 deficiencies, we're just going to look at all 14. We're not going to vote on each one.
No, you're right.
We're not going to vote number one and number two and number three.
So we won't review.
Those deficiencies are finding of the committee that supports the violation.
But you could still discuss each deficiency.
We can still discuss each one.
Discuss it. You just wouldn't go, okay, item one, vote on it. Item two, vote on it.
How do you know whether the three, four guys are in agreement that this one is a reporting deficiency or is even an allegation substantiated?
That's why you have the meeting and you talk
about it. Because we're still going to have the discussion.
But without a vote, like, what? Don't you kind of have to go, where are you on this? Where are you on this?
Because it's going to go back to what you said. If there's one five in there, it's a five. As soon as we hit a five,
rare.
We're done.
It's
or a four, or a three, whatever.
Well, I would think if you found one reporting deficiency, let's say there's 17 items, and you guys talked about all of them, and you found 16 of them weren't, or most people did, and you had one that wasn't, it's still a reporting deficiency.
Right.
So,
or we might say, even though these are all ones, there's so darn many of them, we better give this guy a two or a three.
Right, but even to know whether it's substantiated or not, aren't you going to have to know what's in everybody's brain?
On each one of them.
Right, and I think that's
what
we
should
Doesn't that take a vote? That doesn't take a vote?
I think you guys can
so you just kind of go...
You know, just like
most
we're talking
of the time.
About it. You know,
right.
Just you talk about
we're
it and say,
this isn't. We're going to be talking about that when we substantiate it. We're still going to have to substantiate it or not substantiate
not
it.
Not each one.
No, but the whole group.
Not
well,
each
I thought
one.
We'd still have to substantiate it. We just wouldn't do the voting thing at the end.
No, that's what we're talking about, is not doing this. That's where I'm troubled. Because there have been a lot of cases where it takes knowing that, okay, you're not in agreement with us. Let me talk you through why I believe we should substantiate this.
Right.
And I don't know what... Okay, I get it.
Right.
I don't know what... I know you are not in agreement with me because you've expressed it.
Right.
I don't know where these guys are. Doesn't it take a vote to kind of sort that out?
I wouldn't think so.
I like this idea, but what Melissa said is before he comes, the registrant comes in, the respondent comes in, he gets a list that says Peter found 10 deficiencies in his report. Mm-hmm. He's got it, doesn't he? He still deserves a chance to address all 10 of those one at a time.
Right.
So at some point we're going to have to discuss them one at a time. We're just not going to vote on it at the end, but we're going to say, I didn't see, you know, automatic safety controls on heating. Is it in there somewhere? And he says, yes, it's on page 9. Oh, there it is. We delete it. Or it's not in there. But we're just not going to vote take the time to vote the number of each one. When we're done, we're going to say, okay, we limited 1, 4, and 7. The rest of them are still in there. Put them all together, and what's it worth? 1 to 5.
So if I'm at the other end of the table, then I'm going to analyze, and I'm the complaints against me, I'm going to analyze what I think everybody's at, and if there's one person in agreement, disagreement, and you can't tell because some people don't talk, aren't as expressive as others, I'm going to go, well, let's go before an administrative law judge because there was no clarity on whether that really should have been substantiated or not.
I don't think the respondent's going to be, he hasn't been at 100 meetings like you have. He's been in, he's one, and he wants to get this resolved as quick as he can.
But without the clarity on each one, it's like, isn't there just so much ambiguity to the process that it opens the agency up to, like, well, how are you going to defend all this?
Well, it doesn't matter.
Let's break this out, and
you
tell me what I did wrong.
If you have one deficiency out of 20, it's deficient.
Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you have one or 20. It's
right.
deficient.
Right, and which is why I feel that we should make it just one vote on that.
Yeah.
But I think we also need to go down all those deficiencies and discuss them in committee.
Right.
And, well, we have to give the respondent a chance to address it.
And even if it's an informal vote, on or the chairman actually questions all of us as to whether we have a thumbs up or a thumbs down on it, something like that. I think we need to go through the deficiencies.
Yeah, I think it's an on-off switch.
And
it's
then the report,
yes or no, deficient, non-deficient.
And the report,
sure.
Yeah.
And we have to do that anyway, because sometimes you wrote it up or vice versa, and we get to the meeting, I go, actually, Peter, I found that. It's hidden over here in the plumbing section.
It happens all the time.
So we have to go through them one at a time anyway. We just don't have to put a weight or severity on every one of them.
And then just condense it in the report. That's the way I understood it last time.
Yeah,
condensing it into the report.
Asking the committee to vote on whether or not a violation of that rule has occurred.
Right.
And then tell us why.
Right.
And these deficiencies
will be why.
Would be the reason why.
Exactly. Right. And there may not be 10, there may just be 4.
Mm-hmm.
But
by the time we're done.
It's mm-hmm. elaborated on and would be included in the report that the board gets. So,
I like it.
And
yeah,
maybe someone thinks there should be 5, but regardless, there's still deficiencies.
That's what I'm wondering.
Though.
Why not? It sounds like everyone's willing to give it a shot.
Right.
But
you'll learn as you go and modify.
The only way it could be is if one person thought there was a deficiency and everyone thought there was none.
None.
You know, then you might have to do an informal vote or something. You know, like you're on a jury. You know. And
so what we would do, I assume, at the end, instead of you going down all 12 of them, you'd say, okay, we've got these 6
Does
were substantiated.
Disagree?
Give me your severity on all 6 of them together.
Okay.
Just one time.
Yeah, now,
that's pretty cool.
You guys are the first to hear about it. We haven't told board members, except obviously you two know that this is
going
to be the plan for enforcement.
It's a railroad job here.
Yeah, so we'll be telling the board about it at this meeting.
How do you spell guinea pig?
It's an informational item.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there, Andrew, do you feel like what I say about potential risk to the agency, I don't know if you catch a vision for that or if I'm way off base, but would it be smart to have somebody with legal background watch some of the early ones for the agency?
Well, we invite our attorney general assigned to us to come and sit in and...
That'd be cool. Just to,
in
the early
big
time.
Picture concern, I don't see it in this situation, though.
Cool.
Right. Yeah. I think this is a pretty black and white.
If you have deficiencies
or you don't have deficiencies.
Right.
If I was sitting down there, Dave, just trying to imagine this, because I haven't yet, knock on wood, and there were 10 deficiencies, and you guys said, okay, we're knocking out these 3, these 7 altogether is a severity of 3.
And they all get talked about.
Yeah,
I thought it was not going to be individually talked about.
Well, yeah, we
have
to.
No, they have.
Those are the reasons for,
very good.
In support of the finding of the violation.
Yeah.
The violations occurred.
Perfect.
Okay.
Because I know we've had some where there were 20 or 25 deficiencies, and it took us 40 minutes at the end to go, all right, item 1, all right, item 2, and then have to average down and keep track for the committee chair report, which of course we won't have to do anymore now. So that'll be nice.
Well, and from the perspective of somebody who has prosecuted cases that come out of boards and commissions, to make the report as objective as possible makes the best evidence, where it's not subjective saying, well, we all thought he did a really bad job. That's not really great evidence. You have to say, the report was deficient in this way, and that substantiates the allegation of lack of technical knowledge and skill or whatever it happens to be. So a lawyer prosecuting cases that come out of EACs would then look to anyone who was on the EAC committee to be one of the expert witnesses at the hearing, if it went that far, to explain to the law judge why.
Okay.
It was a deficient report and why the allegation was substantiated. So the report itself is going to be, I believe, as a result of this process, a little more objective.
And how many of them actually reached that stage where you...
Not many. We maybe have 5 formal hearings a year at this point.
A year, okay.
A year.
You can handle
all the disciplines and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, out of like 350 complaints that we get.
Doesn't happen very often.
I have a question. I'm trying to, I'm thinking of streamlining this, because that seems to be the right thing to do. When we get, the process that we have now is we send out an allegation to at least 2 inspectors. They write up their paperwork on that with all their deficiencies. Why do those deficiencies then have to be combined and put into the brief for the committee meeting? If we have 2 assessors that are lining up deficiencies, can't we just put in this one statement that this report didn't meet the standard due to several deficiencies and have our brief not list those deficiencies? We read them in the assessments. When we're preparing for a committee meeting, we're reading the assessments, and we should have our opinions as to whether this report met the standards or not without having to go into all those deficiencies like that. If the committee brief just says report does not meet the standard.
Well, how are we going to put a severity on it then?
Well, then we put a severity on it from doing our homework and reading the assessment.
That means everybody's going to have to do an assessment, basically.
Well, no. We read the other guy. 2 guys do an assessment.
The assessments don't line up all the time. You know.
But if you read this assessment and then you read this assessment, and this guy says he's got 13 deficiencies, and this guy says he has 14 deficiencies, that's really irrelevant. The fact is, he has deficiencies. If you agree with any one of those deficiencies, or if you agree with all of them, then when it comes time to put the number on the very final judgment, you will have a better understanding. Maybe we don't need to be reviewing all of these deficiencies in committee. We've already sent them out to 2 home inspectors.
We're going back to what Melissa said, where he should have the right to refute them.
Well, I'm changing my way of thinking on this as we're sitting here discussing.
All right, but if I'm sitting down there and I have functional flow in there, mm-hmm. I want you to talk about that so I can say, hey, it's right there on page 8 and plain as day.
Some assessments, they don't actually list any. Like, I've seen them not list any.
I've seen those too. We should never let them do them again.
Dovetails in the other part of this agendized item is the new assessment packages that we put together. So all we've done with this assessment is taken the checklist supplement that the industry uses and made that into an assessment report. It's just checkbox, and under each item it's fillable electronically. And it just causes the assessor to go through each item, and if the report's deficient in that area, check the box and tell us why it's deficient.
Yeah, that's why it's so big.
And that's standardized.
And so that is part of this line item to discuss, right? Mm-hmm. So the problem with this is that we have so many different versions, and so if a complaint comes in for an inspection that was done 7 years ago, this enlarged or engrossed checklist or assessment report needs to be customized to be for the date, what this document looked like on the date he did the inspection.
A perfect example is the last one, item 84. Laundry ventilation was in and out twice. Twice we had to report on it. Twice we said, a lot of laundry rooms don't have ventilation. Not the dryer vent, the ventilation. Manufactured homes never have. They might have a window and a door, but they never have an exhaust fan if they're not in a... So I'm just saying that's the very last one, because I know first we had to report on laundry ventilation, then we didn't, then we did again, and now it says you have to report on it if it's there, so you don't get dinged if you don't say anything about it.
It's changed over the years. I mean, we had a real crude one in the beginning. I don't know the level of archiving we have for the history of those, but what's appropriate is that the one applies to the date they did the inspection is the one he should be compared against.
Well, let me ask, when we get home inspection complaints, old are they? I mean,
our complaints are now no older than 2016, but I don't know
when the inspection
was done.
And there is no
limit. I can't imagine
limit.
It's going to be, I mean, it could be, I suppose, but maybe out of the realm will be way out of date, because for the most part, I mean, you know, you have a home inspection, you buy a house, you get in the house, and then you bitch. I mean, you don't wait 4 years and then bitch. Some people do, but, you know, for the majority of them, I mean, I think you have to look at these, I mean, I think you have to look at some of these things as the majority complaints and when they're coming in and when they're being processed.
Well, that's true.
And if there's an outlier, then that one would be a special condition.
And send a form with this one. You
right.
See? That, yeah. That's all you got to do. You got to go research, pull up the form for 2003. Were you certified in 2003?
Mm-hmm. Okay. January 1, 2000.
Right, 2003. Send that. Well, we might not have had an EAC form at that time.
The supplemental checklist.
Do we have those in archive, like, well organized, where that's all the, you know, because we had a yearly cycle for a long time, and there were year after year we were changing.
Actually, it wasn't even yearly. It was just when we had three or four things.
But I think you also don't put the burden on the not the respondent. Because even if it's an old home inspection and the EAC person that reviews it fills this out exactly the way it is now, mm-hmm. and then the respondent gets it back and says, oh, the dryer vent wasn't mentioned, he can come back and say, yes, but when I did this,
it wasn't required.
You put the burden on him.
Well, we didn't have to say ABS. We could just say plastic waistlines in 2000.
Right, and he could come back, and that would be his defense, would say, yes, but when my report was written, here's your standards. I didn't have to do that.
If he's smart enough to know that.
They won't have it. You know, it's the report checklist supplement is the document where we have been giving an interpretation of how we view the standards to be
right.
required in a report. They were crude in the beginning, and they've changed immensely, and they're probably at a highly stable place now.
We didn't even put a revision date on there until a couple years ago.
But even so, the guy who has the complaint against him, he wrote the report back in 2003. He should know what standard he followed.
Well, the standards never changed. This is the point that we're getting. The standards themselves have never changed. It's just as a help to the home inspector, we were telling him what we expect to see. But we still expect to see him meet the standard.
Right.
Taking that a step further, if we three are up here on the EAC, one of us could say, hey, you know what, it wasn't required.
Mm-hmm.
ABS wasn't required.
By memory?
Yeah, well...
Well, maybe by memory, or maybe we don't really care, because ABS really should have been required as you read through the standards. They don't want you to say...
I voted against that. Brian Grant, I voted against that because we thought plastic was fine.
Yeah, but
see, I do have a good memory.
But I think that would be a discussion between the EAC members and the respondent. And you guys can come up with a consensus of, okay, well, yes, you know, this wasn't required or this was required. Or, like Peter said, the standard, you know, the help supplement didn't tell him to do it, but in the standard it did.
Yeah.
And you could say, well, the help sheet didn't tell me to do it. It's like, doesn't
really
matter.
Like plastic or calling it ABS, that's not really clear in the standards.
It's
cleared up in the supplement.
Right.
Okay.
So,
but this is like in the weeds, guys.
Yeah.
We're out in the weeds.
We need to
get back on the floor.
So we don't care that much about, because if you were to do an old report from 05 or something, none of ours will meet the standards. So we're going to have a list of...
Or even from 2010 or 12.
We're going to have a list of things, because that's the educational piece that was sent out to the associations, and we taught on this is what the board requires. It's changed drastically.
Sure. Right, but it doesn't matter. If someone filed a complaint against you out of a 2012 report, you would come in and, you know, even if someone filled out this checklist and said, well, it doesn't comply with today's standards, you would still come in and go, yes, but it did.
We won't possess that proof. I can't prove that.
Yeah, you can.
Sure you can.
You can by doing the research and pulling up the form that you
would work. But as a respondent going to know that?
Where would I get it?
Well, you have it on file.
But you still
know. Yes.
Where would the normal guy get it? I'm not sure.
Standards or not, by virtue of your experience.
Mm-hmm.
What?
You still know if the home inspector is hitting the standard or not.
Yeah.
Should we just interpret it differently now than we did years ago? I'm okay. Let's just go with it.
Because here's something else too. If the complaint, first thing I do when I do an assessment is the little timeline: date of inspection, date of discovery, date of complaint. And if it's a 2012 inspection, why did they wait till 2017? How many are going to be actually substantiated when they're 4 and 5
years old. They went to sell the home, they found out it had aluminum wiring, and the guy never told me it had aluminum wiring. Well, I've done that case.
Right.
Okay. They didn't discover it for 7 years.
Now that's something, you could find something, but I think it's pretty rare.
Yeah, but the truth about aluminum wiring is it's always been in here that if it was there, you had to say it was there. So aluminum wiring is not a good example. And as an, it's a good example of what might come back to bite you 100 years from now, but it's not a good example to say we're using the wrong checklist form. Because aluminum wiring always...
Yeah, it's always been in there, yeah. But no, I was making the point that how many complaints would there be on a 5-year-old? So there could be one.
Personally, I don't change my... I mean, every time we come up here and we put this little revised thing in here, on my master back at the shop when I do assessments and applications, I'm still using a 2012? But I know what the differences are, you know? But I'm still going through a 2012 report checklist supplement because it's... Our changes were so minor and so...
They are pretty minor.
So is your thought, it's if you send out an assessment to someone, you send them the report and you send them this and they fill out this.
Yes.
So then when everyone gets this back, everyone's doing the exact same thing. And that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that you don't have a bunch of different reports that are written in different language and, you know, you've got it. And this will make it easier for the EACs and things like that because you can just look through the checklist and you can go to item 10 and, you know, look at the two that did the evaluations and they both agreed on it, well then it's pretty much a done deal. If they disagreed on it, then you can discuss it. But
now I always fill out a checklist when I do an assessment anyway, automatic, but I think we all have to automatically. So
that's what this is. It's just
I know, but there's space in here. If we have a checklist report, so we don't have electronic, there's no way to copy and paste, we can just put the page number in here. I'm assuming, I'm asking. I mean, we don't have to...
There's a text box under each element.
It'll be electronic.
You can put in there whatever you want, whatever you think is important.
But even if you were doing it by hand, you could just hand write in something.
So just write in page 6, page 7, page 12. Okay.
Whatever you want to say.
And guys, this is just the beginning of the new process. We expect that modifications will probably need to be made as we work through it, but hopefully it will... make everything a little more uniform, more objective, and where we're really making sure we're establishing facts and you know, potential violations of our law that we can clearly explain to the respondent if it goes further to a formal hearing or even in a consent agreement that, you know, this is a fact that was established here. So
then if you didn't get one of these back, you'd just say your assessment's incomplete, right? Because there should be one, whether even if there was no finding of a missing item.
Yeah, and then the explanation
would be... Because like I said, I take the regular checklist and just write the page number in there. So it's just the same thing we've been doing, except we can make notes right here and just hand this whole thing in.
And everyone would be using the same form.
Right.
Now, do you still want a written...
It's all over the place. Different
guys. Right. Do you still want the written assessment?
I agree.
At least a cover letter or something, probably. But
and like I say, some don't even fill it out.
Well, you have a cover letter. You got it all right here. And then you just start it out and let staff take it from there.
What you want in...
You know what I'm saying?
Is there a shot right here sending...
And there's a conclusion sheet, too.
To the respondent to see if they want to dispute any of them?
Well, the respondent gets a copy of all of this, so they can read it and come to the EAC and say, I repeat one,
You can have additional violations and conclusions at the back, and whether or not you want to recommend a committee.
That'll save a lot of time, too.
So could we could add a page, a typewritten page, in lieu of the back.
Yes.
You can add sheets if you want, right?
Because what I always do is I have the three: consideration of allegations, consideration of respondent, and then my final consideration of decision. So I like to be able to explain why I came up with that in there. So I don't have a problem with it.
Well, yeah,
and this does save us some time too, because
it's digital, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Hang on.
We'll send them up.
Randy just raised a good point. For an application, this is perfect. Okay, but for an assessment, this is lacking the review of the allegation itself.
Well, that's what I was going to talk about on the back.
So what you and...
But Peter, if the allegation was true, it would be a failure to meet the standard.
It would show up in here somewhere, is what you're saying.
Yeah, the allegation was against the air conditioner, it didn't work. When you go through the report, you're going to get to the air conditioner section and go, okay, well, this is why the allegation was...
The one I just sent in...
Okay, I can understand that. So if the allegation is about HVAC and the HVAC system, something's going to be checked, okay?
Exactly.
And then we take that and extrapolate, is that the word I'm looking for?
Yes.
On the back sheet.
Right.
Where the...
And that I would just type, that the one I just sent in, the alleger had misquoted the standards. And I wanted to explain that, you know, he quoted this, but actually he misquoted it. That's not exactly what it says.
Right.
This is not considered in need of immediate major repair.
Okay.
It was about swiggles.
Swiggles. That last page just took on a major importance in these assessments. All right? Doug, that last page just took on a major, major importance in the assessment process. In the application process, not so much, but in the assessment process. It's going to need to be taken very seriously.
Last page of the...
The last page of this. Because that's where the guys who know what they're doing are actually going to give you the best heads up as to what's going on.
Yep, and that's what I'm just going to tear that page out and do a typewritten one.
Well, then it's going to go to the EAC and then you can have your discussion and everything else. So this is just step one.
All right. But we have a problem with it. Don't be packing up yet.
There you go. Peter, that's all you need. See attached.
That's good. Yeah. On the we have this for the pool and spa supplement and assessment report. And as I'm going through this, I know that we just pulled up everything off of our checklist forms. I can't believe that our supplemental checklist form would not have included diving boards and water slides. Is that possible?
Yeah, we don't. That's out of the standards because, I mean, in my opinion, those are both catastrophically dangerous, and I don't want to have to report on its condition and go on the line.
We pull diving boards and water slides out of our standard?
How are you going to determine whether, what are you going to call it? You're going to go on record with a diving board and say satisfactory, and then somebody gets checked?
No, but we, yeah.
No, it's outside the scope.
We put diving boards and water slides outside the scope of our pool and spa standards. Is that true? Is it not in our standard?
It's true.
You have to look.
I understand, though, because how would you know?
You
look at a diving board, it could look perfectly fine, but it could have a crack all the way across the bottom.
Well, we can sometimes see stuff like that.
Right.
And works, this is a minimum standard.
Right.
You can report the life out of those things, but if
it's unsafe, you can definitely report it.
Put a 450 pound person on a diving board, there ain't a diving board out there that's safe.
Well, then we ought to be writing that up, not walking away from it, shouldn't we?
Do it.
I do, but I mean...
Very good.
All right.
Okay, here are the standards.
Yeah, they're specifically excluded. You and I met to write these.
Yeah, we wrote it together.
You and I wrote these.
But how did we walk away from diving boards?
We probably argued and I distracted you with something. With like
shiny object.
A Danish.
Keep going. We know what all that means.
You notice how quiet I am now? I inspected a swimming pool in 1997.
Really?
And I said, never again.
You're out.
Slide them on down. We need to stop.
Type of child barrier, yeah.
All right, so let's go
it's
down
in
to
the exclusions.
Let's go down to the exclusions and see. I think David changed these when I was sleeping.
I distracted you.
Not required to report on. I don't see it.
Safety of use of any pool or spa component?
No, diving boards.
Well, that's a component of this.
Yeah.
And that would be a safety concern.
Yeah, but so is a handrail, which we do deal with. Slide down more. Not required to go down to B.
C21.
Yep.
Diving and jump boards.
Water features, fountains, diving boards, jump boards, slides, and similar things.
Trust me, for your liability protection, you want that in there.
Yeah, I agree. The poor guy. Yeah, okay, good. I don't mind it.
Yep.
God.
Just ask the lawyers in the room, right?
God save the guy who doesn't report on it. It's going to take him a year.
You know what every one of our reports it says? It exists, and we suggest you take it out.
That's just the truth.
Unless you don't care, you know, if you care about safety, get it out.
Mine says, very dangerous. Monitor all child activity, and if you don't need it, take it out.
I inspected a house last week with one of those log play sets. It was like the Leaning Tower of Pizza at about 44 degrees.
Pizza?
I just took a picture of it, and I didn't inspect it. It says boldface, not inspected. Howsomever, don't lean against it, because it's going to fall. And don't ever let your children climb on it.
Okay. Are we on to E? Because I don't know what E is. I think we kind of...
We got 15 minutes, or we lose that.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I don't either. That could have been mine, but we have already discussed all that.
Okay, good.
So let's consider that covered.
All right. Director's report?
Yes, please.
Well, we have 792 registered home inspectors as of May 30th. In May, we received 15 new applications, 84 renewals, and we have 495 firms that are registered home inspection. We also are working 22 home inspector-related complaints.
Yikes.
So, yeah, you guys keep investigations very busy. With regard to what's going on at the board, you met Rob, who disappeared. I don't know where he went. But we're excited to have Rob. I don't know if he told all of you, but he's an Army veteran, just recently out of the military. He has an MBA in finance, which is helpful to me since numbers are not my strong suit. He is incredibly tech savvy, and in fact, we met him working on our computer system. He was originally our agency liaison, and he left that company about 4 or 5 months before we hired him. So he's been very helpful, and he's probably working on user acceptance training, which is what we're doing right now. The whole agency is involved in testing the new computer system with the hope that we'll be able to go live on July 1st.
Wow.
So yeah, we'll see. Really, the short version is that we really spent a lot of time looking over what they built for us, and we didn't just approve it because Alicia and Travis have more computer experience than the average state agency personnel apparently does. So we rejected a lot of their work, and they didn't count on that. So it's been taking them a lot longer to build the system than we anticipated. And when I checked our budget last month, it occurred to me, wow, we have a lot of extra money. How come we haven't been paying them? Well, we haven't paid them because they hadn't really been cranking.
What, you mean you wanted to work?
Yeah, and hadn't really been delivering what we thought they should have been all along. So I basically lit some fires over there, and now we've ramped it up because they understand our special appropriation for the computer system will revert if it is not spent before the end of fiscal year. So
that's one way to light a fire, isn't it?
June 30th, but I've also spoken with the state's, what is Clark, the controller? The chief accountant, or comptroller, yeah, for the state, and he says, as long as you're expecting delivery before the end of fiscal year or even a few weeks after, we can save your money and not let it revert. So hopefully we'll be able to pay for it in July and possibly even August. I just need to write an official request letter. So if we wait any longer than that, then the Joint Legislative Budget Committee and the Governor's Office get really aggravated with us. But I am very confident and happy to tell you guys that it is not for our office's lack of really working hard on this, because we dedicated an employee and a half basically to this whole process for the past year, which is a lot. So I'm really glad to have Rob because of that. He understands the inner workings of that company. He's been helpful in my negotiation with them over what they will do and what they won't do.
Okay.
Ms. Pritzel is back from emergency surgery, although that's confidential medical information. But she is very strong for and mighty for a small person. So I just wanted to brag about that.
We knew that.
Yes. And I think that's pretty much it. Did I forget anything? Okay, we're still waiting for the repercussions of legislative session. And the one cool thing about legislative session is we may end up giving out some free licenses as a result of some language that was stuck on a bill that everyone knew would pass because it was aid to needy families, basically. Yeah, and what they did was basically say if an applicant for an initial license in Arizona can claim they earned less than 200% of the federal poverty guidelines, then we have to give them a free license.
A license for what?
To practice home inspection or any of the other apps.
You mean I can be an engineer if I'm poor?
Sure. Yes.
I'm going
to still have to qualify.
You have to meet all the requirements.
Yeah, you still have to qualify.
You just don't pay.
You just don't pay for the initial
But you can get your home inspector certification for free.
And no, right, you guys won't qualify because you'd just be a renewal.
Doesn't apply to renewals.
Why? Doesn't apply to renewals.
Okay.
So it's
only a free license for a year or how many years you guys run this.
So what if we're 200% below the federal poverty level? Then would we qualify?
No, because we still have a license already. But nice try. Yeah, so we don't know what that means for us yet, but Rob was able to do a nice analysis for us, and we're expecting we'll probably lose about $100,000.
And of course, you know, with the laws that they make, you know, we don't know, you know, we know what the poverty level is, but there's no to tell you how you have to prove it.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
Right.
It's just, oh, just do it.
Beautifully written.
And the 90-10 boards, other agencies like us, have written a letter and submitted it to the governor's office saying, gee, we would love to work with you. Please help us by explaining a few things, like can we ask for tax returns? How are we supposed to, are we just supposed to accept their word for it that they're poor? You know, what do we do? And the governor's office response was to cancel a meeting all of us were supposed to have to discuss it yesterday.
Oh, that was okay. I think the association should get the word out. We got free licenses for the next, at least, what?
Don't help, please.
No.
Don't help.
No. Terrible.
So, yeah, so that was a big deal as a result of the end of session, and, you know, who knew?
Mm-hmm.
But, any other?
That was the craziest.
Yeah.
But once again, I think, you know, our thought, our hope is you put the burden on the applicant to make the proof.
To prove,
right.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can't just come in and go, well, yeah, I apply, I'm below 200%. Give me a license. It's like, okay, well,
yeah.
How?
Yeah.
You
right.
know?
Yeah, that's
right. So, yeah, we don't have answers yet, but we're not the only people it concerns because even the big agencies will be impacted. You know, DHS, DES. So
is that going to apply to like driver's licenses and stuff like that?
It might. And I scared the AG's office and said we're all going to ask for a formal opinion, and they're like, "No, go to the governor first." And I'm like, "If we don't get any help from the governor, how else are we supposed to interpret the statute, which becomes effective on August 9th?" So, yeah. Anyway, that's the latest.
That sounds fun.
And did they deregulate anything this session?
No.
No. Well, they got rid of some old kind of boards that weren't really functioning.
Yeah, but nothing that would be notable to you. But what they are working on is consolidating all the health reg boards over in that building that's across from the House of Representatives, and I suspect that, well, that they're required to move in by December 30th. So in time for session, I expect we'll see some of that group be consolidated, just based on the schematic plans for who's going to sit where. It seems obvious to me that they're going to consolidate several of the health reg boards at least, because they're only having six people sit up front for like however many boards there are, 13 or 15 or something like that. So we'll see what next session brings, but we're not being required to consolidate, And I am writing a treatise, which is required by the governor. He issued an executive order requiring us to, all of us, not just this board, but all the boards, to basically justify their existence by answering a bunch of questions like, what are your initial licensure requirements? How much money do you charge people for licenses and for renewals? Do you require continuing education? And then compare yourselves to other states nationally to see if we're charging too much or we're overstepping our authority by requiring too many requirements for people to get, oh, and are you a felon and do you have a felony bar? They want to know that too, because he wants to give felons licenses. So,
I don't think we are. There are some states that are pretty lenient, but there's other
we
states.
We have a 5-year felony bar for home inspectors, so I expect that to be a bone of contention with the governor. Like, why are you making people wait 5 years before you'll give them a home inspection license?
Because realtors get raped and killed.
And I put that in the... Good. That I didn't say raped and killed, but I said, you know, health and safety of the realtors and perspective and homeowners for theft and all of that. So it's all in the
I meant our whole overall process compared to other states. We've got the parallel inspections most other states don't have.
Yeah.
Washington just did something kind of like that, but it's still not as strict as ours.
So I can send you guys a copy of the treatise. I'm going to have the board look at it. The board's looked at it one draft already. Alejandro sent me numerous suggestions.
What a surprise.
And so they'll take a look at the final draft at June's meeting, and it's then hopefully it will be approved or with just minor stuff. And then we have to transmit it to the governor on the 30th. So,
I have a question. So as an end user, like when the new computer system goes in, what kind of changes will we feel? Like online renewals?
Yes. Online applications, online renewals, payment with credit card will probably be what you guys as end users will notice most about the change. And hopefully that means it will go through. The website access will not be available immediately because they're still working on it. But hopefully by the end of the year.
It's a redesign of the website and everything?
Yes.
And it won't be ready till the end of the year?
Probably not. I'm hoping sooner, but in reality, it'll probably be later.
Well, what about the online registration renewal? That's immediate, or?
Because of the website interface, I expect that won't be available.
Till the end of the year also?
Right.
And at that point, will it send out emails to us saying, hey, you're due next month or whatever?
Yep.
So not really till the end of the year for sure, even if you...
Yeah, I'm pretty confident that the end user won't see much difference until the end of the year.
All right. And then, finally, I know there's 22 home inspector complaints being worked, and I wish I could give you some hope that future looks like that's going to decline, but...
With more work, there'll be more complaints.
Well, beyond that, people have such unrealistic expectations anymore that, you know, it's just not going to... Just so you know, your job security is there. You're set. Kinda, actually. We're looking at the, you know, depending on what the governor does or whatever.
Yeah.
Legislature. Okay. As far as committee chairman's report, I didn't have anything. I don't know. I see some of the things that the real estate community does to kind of entice the home inspection community into financial, you know, investment or whatever.
Support.
Mm-hmm. And so I don't know, as it relates to that, there is a bit of hope potentially that once it's not a substantive policy statement, but it's a rule, does that carry more weight in some ways? Like if...
The rules definitely carry more weight.
They do.
Which one are you talking about?
Just like pay or receive directly or indirectly, a commission as a
referral. Oh, okay. Right?
So...
pay to play.
Yeah, the pay to play stuff, you know, it still goes on, and I think they found the perfect way to get around it. I'm not going to say what it is because this is being recorded, right? I think they found a way around it, but
don't fall into the dark side.
Yeah, I know. I just watch it happening, you know. So, anyway, that's about all I have.
Okay.
Next item is future agenda items, and
you wanted to carry C.
I was thinking 5B, which was from the 14th meeting.
Something about the verbal.
The abbreviated home inspections.
Verbal abbreviated report.
Oh wait, yeah, 5B.
You wanted to carry 5C.
Rules updates.
And
we discussed mandating that we get some inspection report from.
Because we know that we didn't discuss them today because they're not published yet.
So are we still of the opinion that 5B from the February meeting?
That was a big B, right?
Yeah, big B. Make allowances for abbreviated reports if there is large enough notice that this is not a home inspection report.
I don't know what else
committee indicated.
There is to discuss on that.
Just carry it over and we'll discuss it next time. Discussion and recommendation on verbal abbreviated home inspection reports. So,
yeah. That's probably a good discussion to have.
Yeah.
And then 5E on this one, we blew away applicant report. Reviews and license application,
right.
I can't remember what that's about.
Yeah, we couldn't either.
I think I sent that in as an item, but that got covered in these earlier.
In the previous
items.
Yeah,
the ABC
kind of
covered
that.
And then changes to EAC meetings and assessments is D. So I guess I'd like to see 5C just be a progress report on the rules,
mm-hmm.
where it's at, and then I guess similarly on D, just a how's it going or a progress report on, because it's a big change, and just to stay informed if anybody's out of the loop, we can just all be informed on.
Cool. So you want to meet next month?
Yeah.
Fun. Yeah, in Las Vegas.
Yeah, right.
It's no cooler
anywhere
there.
Anywhere but here.
San Diego, maybe.
There's more attractions. So what do we historically do, like September or something?
Yeah, I think so. Of course, you could always come in and review your application.
That's a fantastic idea.
I'm just going to have to go along with what everybody says.
Tuesday the 5th is the first Tuesday.
Of what month?
September.
The 4th is Labor Day, though, so it's...
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bad one. How about the...
12th.
I have...
The CLARB meeting I have to go to is the 13th. Not that we couldn't meet on the 12th, but...
I have a conflict there, too.
Do? Okay.
What about Thursday the 7th?
That's what I was going to say.
Thursday
the 7th?
Are you good with that?
Does that work, Randy?
September?
I have no idea.
You don't even care.
Okay.
Thursday.
September.
What I need
seven.
To do is, if you would, send me an email.
9:30, 10.
What time, guys?
We can be right back to 9:30. My apologies for the 10 a.m.
I was so confused.
No.
So was everyone here.
So the 7th is good.
Yes.
9:30. We'll go back to. Okay.
That's okay with Randy.
Will you shoot me an email, Dave?
I'll just send you a
or a text or
I'll
something.
I'll add you to my. My calendar. I'll invite you.
Travis, let me bring in a wire. Is this the right time?
Yes,
I'm confused.
Randy to Inspect Prescott, right?
9/7.
Randy to Inspect Prescott, right?
InspectPrescott.com, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Yes, and so...
God, this is so much fun.
To adjourn.
Yeah. Final motion.
I'll make a motion, Mr. Chairman, that we adjourn.
I'll go second.
Okay.
Any opposition?
Anybody against that motion?
No.
How about if we...